today we got a lot of, we're wrapping up this series, and we have a special guest with us from Targeted Counseling. I don't know if you got to see or talk to them as they were sitting out by their table and stuff. But as we wrap up this Winning the War in Your Mind, I want you to give a nice warm welcome to Miss Alicia DeWitt here this morning. We tried to get some extra time. We told the worship band, we're like, hey, can you guys cut the third song or at least just play it at the end so that we could get to all these questions, because we may not get to them all, and if we do or don't, you can go back to the first services on Facebook and you can check it out there. But Miss Alicia, why don't you tell them how awesome your husband is? Oh, wait. and also a little bit about yourself and how you came to be here at Innovation this morning.
How awesome my husband is. Get ready.
That's just because we have the same haircut, and so I figured.
No, he's wonderful. He's absolutely wonderful. I'm so thankful he's here supporting me today. Why I'm here. Number one, I love Jesus.
Woo-hoo.
And that is enough said, but you're probably wondering why I'm here about mental health. And so for the last 10 years or so, I have worked in a wide variety of different capacities in mental health, everything from school counseling to residential treatment facilities to now private practice. And so I'm a licensed mental health therapist. So with that licensure in the state of Indiana, that allows me to treat people's mental health conditions.
Awesome. Awesome. So she's here to help us with our mental health conditions. and so all this month we've been gathering questions from whether you've scanned that QR code, right? Because if it's your first time here, you can scan it and text the word connect and you get a free gift out of guest services. That's awesome. If you're like wanting to follow along even with the questions and the scriptures that we're talking about today, you can scan that code right there and the word app. Just text in the word app and it'll send you the link to get the app. And so there's stuff like Devo that you can like get the devotional of the week. There's all types of things, that little QR code. In case you're bored in there, just text out random words. And we'll try to find something that matches that word. I shouldn't have told the second service that, though. So
you're warmed up.
I know, I am, I am. So winning the war in your mind, that has been our topic of the month. We've been going through scriptures. If you missed it, it's all available on our website or on our Facebook page. We're not going to do the review this service. We're going to get right into the questions so that we can answer the things that you asked. And so the very first one is this one. Maybe you have a hard time telling the difference. So how do you differentiate between everyday fear, anxiety, and a mental health disorder?
Okay. How many of you felt anxiety? How many of you felt it this morning? Right? We all experience anxiety. We all experience fears. These are feelings, a lot of times tied to thoughts that we have, which is what you've kind of been warring against, right? But everybody experiences stress and anxiety, and it doesn't mean that something's wrong with you. I actually do believe that anxiety is meant to be helpful. It's meant to be an emotion tied to a body sensation that happens in your body that's meant to keep you safe. It's meant to be helpful. You've heard of fight or flight? Has anybody heard of that? Yeah, fight, flight. Sometimes we hear freeze. Anxiety does that for you, right? When a car whooshes in front of you in the as you're driving, or they're driving by and you're standing there and it whooshes, you right? And you feel that flood of chemicals that goes through your body. That's anxiety. That's one form of it. Another version could be you have to take a test tomorrow or speak in front of a church, and your body is readying you for action, right? Getting you ready and spurring you on. It's meant to be a good thing, but sometimes people's anxiety or fears or whatever can get pushed too far. And when it gets pushed too far, then it becomes more like a symptom, we'll say, is how we'd look at that. And when it becomes a mental health disorder, that is when the anxiety is creating symptoms that are so strong in somebody's life that it is keeping you from being able to function, either at work or at home or at school. And that's usually over time, and that's impacting your days regularly. And so that is when we would say, ooh, this is beyond just regular stress or beyond regular grief even, right? But now we're saying, okay, I'm not myself. I am no longer functioning in my daily life. That's when to seek help.
Okay. Alrighty. The next one is, how can we support someone struggling with mental health who refuses to seek help? Like they don't want to change, and what do you do?
Yeah, they're resistant. They're maybe in denial, and they don't want to. You told me earlier I could be blunt and real with you all. You can't fix them. Just let that sink in a moment, because we all have people that we love, right? And their problems become our problems. But they're not your problems. They're their problems. And you need to let God be God and transform that person, and you be their support. You love them. You let them know that they're not alone, because let's face it, if someone's needing mental health help and they're struggling, it's a very isolating feeling. And so the more you can let them know they're not alone and that they have you, and if the opportunity arises to offer a resource, then be ready. But other than that, just be with them on their journey. The struggle is real, and it's usually a process. And so the less you can try to fix and the more you can try to just be with them, I think that will be better.
Yes, you are not Jesus, and you're not Mighty Mouse. Either one, you can't rush in to save the day. Really, I was reminded of Romans 12. If you look through Romans 12, that's the chapter that talks about weeping with those who weep, mourning with those who mourn. Many times, people just need somebody that's willing to listen, not sit there and try to fix them. And I'm preaching this to myself, because I do that with my wife all the time. I'm here to fix this. And that's not always the
men,
case.
Men, right? Oh. Men are good at like readying to action to fix things. I think that's like common.
Yes.
men are good at fixing most of the time. But I mean, a lot of us don't want someone to fix us. We want someone to support us and love us and help us feel cared for and encouraged.
Very true. Alrighty, next question. They get
You're
easier,
welcome.
Don't worry.
No.
They get easier. How can someone cope with the mental health effects of... Now, many of you guys know this is a subject that's near and dear to us, you guys, that they gave towards the Christmas offering. I got to talk with Jared Ballinger even just this week, and I was like, hey, we are sending over a check that's going to help rescue 3 kids out of child trafficking this week. And he would like burst up into tears and said, thank you. So I wanted to bring forth that thank you from him. And so that is awesome. But obviously, there are residual effects of that. Not only in kids, but also in adults. And so this question came in, how can someone cope with the mental health effects of grooming, human trafficking, and PTSD?
Sometimes just looking at those words can make someone feel triggered, right? You might notice, even as you're just listening, your body shifts a little bit, or something gets really uncomfortable reading those words. Right? And so I want to honor and acknowledge that that can be hard, even to just see those words on the screen or that we're talking about it. So what I'd like to do is kind of lump all of those into the word trauma. Is that fair for everybody, that we could say that those all are related to trauma? Actually, so let's do this. So could I invite you all to do a little exercise with me? I want you to notice... Well, I'm going to guide you through it. If you're comfortable, close your eyes. If not, just kind of drop your gaze to the ground, and I'd like you to notice your body. And so I'd like you to start with your, we're talking about trauma, human trafficking, grooming, PTSD. Those are really difficult words. And so I'd like you to just pay special attention to your toes and press your toes into the ground. It shouldn't hurt, but press it in so you can feel pressure, and then release your toes. And now I'd like you to press the balls of your feet into the ground. That's that spot just under your toes. Press those into the ground and release. And I'd like you just to notice your feet. You might notice that they feel heavy. You might notice you got to itch your foot. It's okay. Now I'd like you just to work your way up your body, paying attention. Pay attention to your calves and your knees. See if you notice any discomfort. Or are they relaxed? Neutral? Let's go up to your thighs and your hips. Maybe just take a breath in as you're feeling your thighs. Work your way up, noticing maybe your hips or your stomach. Is it feeling good because you had a bagel? Did you miss the bagel and now you're very hungry? I'm talking about bagels. Okay. Notice your chest and your lungs, right, as your breath comes in. We're just paying attention to our body. That's it. This isn't anything weird. The tops of your shoulders. Is there anything tense, calm, uncomfortable? And then the top of your head, your face maybe. Take one more breath in through your nose, out through your mouth, and open your eyes as you're comfortable. I just want to see, by a show of hands, was there anybody that noticed something in their body that they didn't know was there before? Anybody notice anything? Ah, quite a few hands. Did you notice anything?
No.
No. You were already fully aware of all of the things? Yeah. Sometimes there's like, it's like, man, I didn't even notice I was so tense in my shoulders, right? And we'll feel that in our bodies. And what happens is sometimes in our bodies, things are happening that we're unaware of. Sometimes we're, it helps that we came in and worshiped first. That's kind of like a way to recenter us, which is really good, but that's sometimes different when we're at work. And so when I like to think about this in the form of talking about trauma, what happens is that, and I want to kind of caveat that everything you guys have been learning with the battle of winning the war in your mind, that this battle is happening, that is absolutely important and valuable and one piece of the puzzle. Okay. But I want to also acknowledge that when it comes to trauma, we aren't necessarily experiencing that in our mind. On some level, yes. But, you know, if we could think our way through trauma, we would. If we could think our way through feeling better, we would. And so trauma actually locks down in our bodies and in our nervous system. So if we're unable to get away from danger and we get stuck there, the trauma gets stuck in your body. And so that is the other piece of the puzzle. So the beauty is that if you can walk into different types of trauma therapies, right, and do body things like EMDR is a term you might have heard. Yes, you can talk through things as well, but also somatic experiences. One of the most amazing times that I get to kind of experience this with people is that we very slowly and safely can work through traumatic experiences with people. And then, especially when there's Christians, we can invite Jesus into that place. Places that have been locked down and, nope, that's never going to happen to me again, right? Places where we would never want to kind of open that can of worms. We're able to do that very, very slowly and very, very safely. And then when Jesus comes in, he reframes it and transforms it all. And it is absolutely beautiful. It is beautiful.
Yeah. Awesome. All righty. Next one is how to empower your partner to join you in elevating your home life without diminishing their mental health and pride.
That's a big question, right? Yeah, you all, your questions are great. I asked my friend to talk me through these, and she said, this is like a semester-long course of information, so please know that this is like personal opinion, some of it, and things that I think are helpful, but it is some of these, you know, we're only just giving you just a brief snippet of a much bigger thing. But so yeah, looking at this, I initially think about the word on the top there. It says your partner. And so even this question seems a little bit like the partner is aware of something that the other partner is not. Or they think that they have it figured out and the other person doesn't. And so we just have to be really, really careful when we're approaching our partner that we're approaching them as a partner, right? Doing it in unity and doing it with them with curiosity rather than you do this and I do this and I'm always the one that does this, right? That type of, I mean, you're just asking for a fight. But rather curiosity about where the other person is coming from so that in unity you can come to a conclusion together, letting them know where you are, letting them know where you'd like to be, but at the very same time, I think it's important to honor them, but also do it together.
Awesome. This next one, I kind of had this one too, about just counseling in general. Like once you sign up, are you in it forever, right? no, that's not it. Where is that? I don't know. Where'd it go?
Just like how long does counseling typically last?
How long should you expect to be in mental health counseling? Like, is it forever?
I don't know. No, I would say that question, it is absolutely tied to every person, right? There are, when you go into counseling, you should have very specific goals of why you're there. And if there aren't any goals and you're just there to talk in circles, it's probably not very helpful. And so I think it's good to have goals and know what your goals are. A good therapist is going to walk you through and be aware of those goals all the time. And hey, it seems like we've met this and this goal. Is it time, like, do you need me anymore? Or is it time to set a new goal, right? There should always be these decisions that you're making along the way and checking in. And so for some people, it's like, I come in for this specific goal, I've arrived, and peace out. And for other people, it's like, okay, well, those goals, now that I've tackled those, now I've opened all this other stuff that I've never looked at before, right? And so inner work is really hard work, and there's a lot of threads. Like, think of it like a tree, right? You come in to deal with a branch on the tree, but really, like, sometimes Jesus wants to go down to the root and really fix and heal what's really going on. And so sometimes that can take years for people. And so I don't know. I can't answer that for each individual person, but...
Alrighty. Back to the one that came up on the screen when it wasn't supposed to. how can you recognize signs of mental health struggles in your children, and at what age should you start to be concerned?
Okay, good question. No specific age necessarily. I think that it's important to know what is developmentally appropriate for each age. And you can do that like a quick Google search. Like, what are the typical things in the way that kids should be growing, right? It is common for a 7-year-old maybe to all of a sudden start struggling with saying goodbye to their parent because their brain just started to learn how to realize that, oh, when like dad goes to work, he has this whole other world that he's living in. Whereas before he just, oh, dad's not in front of me, and now he is. Like it's, and so their brains are growing and changing, and knowing what's appropriate at each age, I think, can help answer that question. Like teenagers, right? They are beginning to explore their identity and figure out who they really are, and they care more about what their peers are thinking and saying and doing than the parents. Sorry, not sorry. That's reality. You have to, I'm sorry. But they don't care as much what the parents say. And it doesn't mean that you don't have a voice, but it does mean that there is a shift that's happening. And so to know when to seek out help would be, okay, this is a struggle that's moved beyond what's typical for this age, like a 7-year-old fear. They all have fears. But if it is overtaking them, overwhelming them, keeping them from life in some capacity.
Yeah, I know we got together, just threw it out there. Hey, parents, do you want to talk about this? And just a couple weeks ago, we got together and how to talk to your kids about depression, how to talk to your kids about anxiety. That QR code there actually takes you to that whole Google Drive and those resources, the videos that we watched and introduced, as well as some of that non-Google search. Like it's a whole document that's put together, like signs to look out for, things to watch out for. Your kid may have ADHD or ODD or all the different Ds that are there. And so that was a great resource for those that were there. And even for those that are not there, I wanted to make sure that you guys get an opportunity. Next one. Oh, this one's hard. I don't know if she's ready for the questions that Innovation has. All righty, here we go. How can family and friends offer to support to someone dealing with gender dysphoria or navigating their gender identity?
It's a really good question and a really hard one because, as we know, this topic is very pertinent in our culture today and pendulums are shifting, even in our laws and things like that. And so I think it's just really important to think of a couple of things as you're navigating this. One, I think it's like recognizing it's okay to see that someone's hurting, right? How can we love on them? Just as if someone was like walking through divorce, how would you support them or love them as they're going through something difficult? And this is a challenging topic, but not approaching it as a judgment because of what you see on the outside, but rather a curiosity, right? To get to know them and understand their heart more than what you're seeing externally. But I think bigger picture, if we kind of zoomed out, I think this topic can be really tricky because in the mental health field, there is sort of this greater understanding that there are multiple, someone can choose and there are multiple genders and it's very fluid, but then God's word is very black and white. And so you have male and female. And we're not necessarily talking about how someone dresses, right? We're talking about that gender identity. And so even among Christian therapists, you might navigate this topic along that spectrum of you might have Christian therapists who swing one way or are on the opposite. And it can feel really uncomfortable, right, as you're seeking out resources. And I would just think it's really important to know the resources that you're reaching out to, making sure that they align with your, what's the word I'm looking for? They align with your beliefs, your values. Yeah, excuse me. Thank you. And I think that would be really, really important. I guess one particular resource that if somebody was wanting to kind of lean into this, and this would be more for the person, not the supporter, but there's a resource called from Dr. Linda Seiler. It's called Restoried. And she was a transgender, almost about to transition to be a man, and legally change her name to David. And then God kind of got a hold of her heart, and she totally kind of flipped and said, okay, God, if I believe that you are who you say you are, and I believe that you love me enough not to keep me where I'm at because I don't like the way I feel in myself, then you need to change me to make me more like you. And you need to get a hold of my heart. And so, I mean, that's like a little tiny snippet of her story. But if you're looking for a resource on that avenue, she's a really, really great one, is not afraid of bucking culture, so to speak.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. I don't know if my wife wrote this one or not. How can you effectively communicate with a partner who's constantly distracted by multiple electronic devices?
Yeah, this one's really good. I think it ties back to the same question as before. It's like, how do you connect with your partner long enough, I suppose, to have that conversation. And where are they, right? Do they understand that this is even a thing? Do they agree it's a problem or don't they? Do they want support in this or are they kind of in denial? I mean, all of those things, I think, factor into how you're going to approach it. But I think if they are in agreement that, yes, this is a problem, then working together in partnership and in unity and just problem solving together and getting really curious. Why do they need that, right? Or why? What are they using that for? If they're in complete denial, well, we got some different supports that need to be put in place probably. But it's a tricky one. But I think that it's good to recognize that we're all distracted on some level. And so we just have to be careful not to like zoom in and point out somebody's fault without first looking at ourselves too and how we're reacting.
Yeah, very true. I think we got through all of them this time. How long do mental health records affect you and your future employment?
Yeah, many of these are kind of nuanced questions, right? Thinking about many of these questions even, it's like you can't just give a blanket answer because there's so many things that play into it. And so... Yeah. I kind of think that, when you think about most of these topics, right, it's like we're giving just this little bite-sized answer to something that's deep and wide and that Jesus would offer a level of, like, tenderness and compassion that was needed. But even this one, I'm kind of like, well, what is the circumstance here? What? I'm curious. I just become really curious. But I guess on the surface, answering this question, I keep mental health records for 7 years by law. So you're just kind of like your taxes. You know, you keep things for 7 years. But there are electronic health records these days. And so it is possible that organizations can keep things much longer. I don't know. Every organization is probably different on how they navigate that. But there is a difference between, like, for myself doing private practice, everything I do is private pay versus when you go through your insurance. And so I can just kind of see people. And I do keep records and things like that. But it's not going anywhere. Versus when someone's going through their insurance, the notes and your diagnosis is required in order to use insurance because it has to be medically necessary. And so all of that information then goes to your insurance. And so not necessarily like what you talked about in sessions, but what diagnosis and things like that, is it would follow with you for at least that 7 years through your insurance. So that would affect employment on potential jobs, I would think, for some. I'm not sure what comes to mind, though. Maybe military, police. Yeah, they are. But certain jobs, like military, right, they're going to do a background check, and they're going to ask about stuff like that. So there's a level of hesitation sometimes people have with accessing mental health care because they don't want the stigma or they don't want that record to follow them and keep them from a job. And so it's nuanced again. It's not every job, obviously, but I don't know. You could see me afterwards and I can answer more specifically.
All righty, got another one. This one, definitely. How can I co-parent with my ex-husband in a way that protects my mental health and the progress that I've made, also while ensuring children's emotional and academic stability? There's been trauma and pain that has been caused, but they want to set healthy boundaries while allowing him to be reintroduced into their lives.
Yeah, this one's tricky. This one's, I don't know, I'm in a blended family as well and remarried, and so this one hits home, right? I know what it's like to, my kids aren't here because they're at their dad's, and you feel like a piece of you's missing when they're not home, right? When they're not home, a piece of you's missing. But they're not mine. Those girls do not belong to me, even though I birthed them. You know, they don't belong to me. They belong to the Lord. And so I think that has given me the most hope because if I love them that much, then how much more is my Father going to care for them? And he knows more about them than I do and knows exactly what's happening. And so that gives me a lot of peace and a lot of comfort, but it doesn't mean that there isn't a level of healing that needs to take place. And so this person is talking about both the internal and external things, right? So the external things of like navigating maybe a court order or navigating the back and forth. And so there's a level of difficulty with that. But finding out, I think even working with a therapist to find out what are the boundaries that you need to remain healthy. But at the very same time, recognizing that sometimes your idea of boundaries is going to get stretched because it's not necessarily always what's best for you. It's what's best for your kids. And so that's a really challenging thing. I guess I want to share maybe the heart aspect. This isn't necessarily answering this person's question, but I feel like sometimes stories are more helpful. So I actually don't think I'm a very unforgiving person. Like, I'm pretty, like, I don't, like, hang on to things. I'm not angry. Pretty cheerful person. But I was reading this book called Total Forgiveness by R.T. Kendall. Oh, man. To be honest, when I read the first chapter, I was at the gym with my husband, and this book about forgiveness, like, I had already forgiven him, right? I've done all the work. I'm a therapist. I know what I'm doing. And, man, I read the first chapter of this book, and I slammed it shut. And if I wasn't at the gym on that stupid treadmill, I would have thrown that book across the room. I was so frustrated, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, there is a good work that God wants to do in me. Like, why am I, what is that, right? You get really curious about yourself. Like, why am I so angry? What's up? And so as I continued through this book about forgiveness, it's a journey, right? And Satan would love to say, oh, you're mad again? You didn't really forgive him the first time. Well, I did. It just sometimes takes you back to the beginning. You got to go through all the steps all over again. So that book's really good for talking about the journey of forgiveness. But, it's been a long time now. But I would say at the beginning of divorce, I was kind of at a point where I had to constantly be reminded, you're not the judge. God says, I'm the judge. You're not the judge. And I'd be like, yeah, I know. I'm not the judge. Right, and then pretty soon in the journey, right, this is like a year and a half long journey, he says, okay, I've realized I'm not the judge. He also says, you're not the prosecutor. You don't get to just like point and notice all the things that he's doing wrong and tell God all about them. You're not the prosecutor. I'm like, all right. It's like this humbling process, right? It's really hard. Not the prosecutor. Okay, God, I got that, right? And that would take time for that to sink in. And then you're not the court reporter. You don't just get to, like, look at, well, here he's done it again. You know. You don't get to be that either. I'm like, okay. So I finally am at this place where I've kind of humbled myself in his presence and saying, like, if I'm none of these things, like, what is my role? And God just gave me this picture of, like, I've been in the courtroom all of this time, and he invited me to walk out of the courtroom, and I'm standing there holding the door, just this beautiful picture, and off to the right is God's throne room. And he invited me to come into the throne room instead and to be with him in his presence. And as I let go of the door in my picture, I saw my ex sitting on the stand. And it was the first time I went, oh, no. I don't want that for him. You know, when I was wanting to judge him and prosecute him, right? I was in a wrong role. And so I needed to get my heart right, even though I wasn't holding on to unforgiveness necessarily. But I was still in a wrong relationship with my pain. So when I was willing and able to walk into the court, into his throne room, even deeper and more amazing freedom and healing is available. And so I don't think it answers that person's question per se, but I guess I just want to offer the hope that you can do that. And wonderful.
As we get ready to close here, I mean, we know that, I don't know if you've noticed, but in the many of years in being involved in church work, it's the scriptures say, do not be anxious about anything. That's how you handle your mental health. Just don't be anxious about it, right? Or cast all your anxiety on him, right? Because he cares for you. That's how you're supposed to handle mental health. We wanted to say, you know what? There's more to it. We wanted to invite in Alicia and have her talk about it. She obviously has a lot of resources and knows plenty of others. We're going to be sharing out through the text message stuff. So if you're not, scan that QR code, text connect. We'll make sure and get that out to you this week. But a whole list, even ones that says, hey, if you have this insurance, you need to do this. If you can't afford it, this is who you need to go to. Stuff like that. Stuff, I want a Christian counselor. I don't want a Christian. Like, there's all those things. And so those resources we're going to make sure and get out. But another resource that I wanted to just get your opinion on as we close off, like, we do these things called connect groups, because we believe that life is done better together. And so we've got one coming up called a freedom group. It's all about knowing freedom, and it's everything from freedom from addiction to freedom from just your bitterness and anger and anxiety and stuff like that. So we've got that. We've got one called Mind Traps. There's another one, a mom's group. They just get together as moms and help one another. There's another one called The Heart of the Family, another one, Study of Rahab, Fruits of the Spirit, Strength and Struggle. There's a whole great one that's coming up called the 33 Series for men, where it's just men getting together as men, others for leaders. How important do you say is to not walk through these journeys alone, that get together with others and flesh this stuff out together? Is that beneficial?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And I think you already kind of answered the question. It is completely important. We just don't heal well in isolation. Research shows that even as people are waiting to get into mental health support groups with like a therapist leading the group, if they join a peer support group, so it's just like people who are also going through bipolar disorder, right? And there's nobody leading the group saying like, I know because I'm the leader of the group. They're just all there to support each other, that the healing in those group is exponential, because there is healing in community. When we are connected to others, and we were able to connect to others, what happens is we develop this feeling of safety. So when I think about it from a mental health component, right, we talked about trauma earlier. You cannot heal from trauma if you continue to feel unsafe. We sing a song tonight about like he is our safety, he is our place of refuge, that we can feel safe in him. And so when you are feeling both safe and connected, there is something that happens in the spirit, I think, especially when we then invite the Holy Spirit into those places and into those conversations, that's where true healing begins.
Amen. Yeah. Amen. So, you didn't have to just take everything from my word, this series. I wanted to bring in somebody much smarter than me, somebody much more qualified, somebody that has all the letters behind their name. And so, can you give Miss Alicia a round of applause and thank her for coming in today?